I had the opportunity to visit your very beautiful temple this afternoon. I was simply amazed that it's come up so quickly. In just a matter of months, it's almost like, well, almost like it's self-manifest. I know it's not self-manifest. I know it's the hard work, combined effort of all the devotees under the expert leadership of His Grace Hari Vilas Prabhu. A fantastic team. And just very well designed and everything very well thought out. I was really impressed. And very beautiful, spacious. It was very nice. So, congratulations. Everyone has played their part, big and small. I remember, I think last year I was speaking, I believe, at a Sunday program, and I was encouraging, playing my very small part in encouraging the devotees to work cooperatively together to build that temple. But you know, usually, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I know there are temples, even ISKCON temples in this country, they're still on the drawing board after several years. So you've done an amazing thing, and it's all by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and your very beautiful deities who certainly deserve such a wonderful home. So this evening we're continuing our reading and discussion of Prabhupada's epic poem, Vrindavan Bhajan, which he wrote upon retiring to Vrindavan, as we discussed in great detail last night. And this morning, at our morning program, we read verse number 2, so we're going to read and comment from verse number 3. This is a long verse of the poem. Ocean foam is created in an instant by the action of the waves. Just as abruptly, the foam is also disintegrated after a momentary existence. The game of illusory material family life and its affairs is just like that, suddenly beginning and then terminating after a short existence. In truth, no one can actually be said to be a father, a mother, a relative, or a dear friend, since everyone remains, as do the bubbles of foam in the ocean, for just a very brief period of time. As ocean foam finally merges back into the ocean water from where it came, similarly, material bodies, which are temporary products of the material energy made of the 5 gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, are also eventually destroyed by the actions of the material energy. And finally, the elements of the dead body merge again with the total material elements. The temporary material body is certainly not the real person, nor even alive. There is a living spiritual force present in the body that is not the body, but which makes each body alive. That living force is the real self, the eternal spirit soul, for which the short period of life temporarily possesses a particular material body, then leaves that body at death and enters into a new body and is born again, repeating the whole cycle. Repeating this cycle of birth and death again and again, how many innumerable different bodies have been accepted by each eternal spirit soul? Therefore, all the so-called family relatives and friends have no actual relation with the eternal self, the spirit soul, but really they are only relatives of the temporary material body. Srila Prabhupada ki. So in the third verse, or you could say stanza, might be more appropriate, of Srila Prabhupada's very deeply realized poem written in the 1950s in Sri Vrindavan Dham before his departure for America. He lambasts the material concept of life and all that it entails. We've heard it many times, and we will hear it again and again and again and again. Even there's a number of purports in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was really Srila Prabhupada's great gift to mankind. His translations and purports or commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in the 10th canto, which describes the all blissful pastimes of the Supreme Lord, specifically in Sri Vrindavan Dham, Prabhupada's speaking very strongly about material life. Because as we know, we can't really take up Krishna consciousness in earnest if we still maintain some attraction or affection for the material energy. It appears that even after many years, perhaps even many lifetimes, a devotee may still maintain material desires, even while in the process of Krishna consciousness. And I think if we're really honest with ourselves, we can recognize that in each of our hearts. Prabhupada told a short story to illustrate that. And I remember when I was a young devotee laughing at the foolishness of the person who was described in this story. As a young man, I was laughing at this old man's foolishness. The story was that a spiritual master was speaking to his disciples how material attachment, specifically the public enemy number one, which Prabhupada characterizes lust. Lust, anger, and greed are the three gates leading to hell, but of the three, Prabhupada said lust is most difficult. Krishna even himself says all-devouring lust is the enemy of the soul in this world. Speaking very strongly of the subject matter, and was explaining how this desire can remain in the heart for many, many years together, even up till old age. And after the discourse, one of the disciples approached the spiritual master and said, "Guru Maharaj, how is it possible that in old age, after so many years, a lifetime of devotional service, one can still retain such a strong affection for the material energy, particularly in the form of man's attraction to women or women's attraction to men? How's it possible? So many years of purification." And especially in old age when the body cannot even entertain such desires. The body is old and weak. The senses are, you could say in one sense, subdued by time. But the desire remains like a flame burning in the heart. How is that possible? The body doesn't facilitate such a desire. Certainly one would be intelligent enough to give it up. So the guru took the disciple to a hospice, as we'd say, or where a place where people were sick and leaving their bodies. And he said, as we enter into the room, you'll see one old man in bed. He's in his late 80s. And we'll enter in with my daughter. The spiritual master had one daughter. In Vedic culture, very often the grihasthas were also accepting that service of initiating disciples. He said, "You watch the eyes of that old man as we walk in, just about to die." So the student watched very carefully as they walked in, and rather than the eyes of that old sick person falling on the saintly personality, the spiritual master very carefully observed the actions of the young girl in his old age. So in this way he could understand what the spiritual master was teaching him. So better we deal with these things quickly and effectively, not embarrass ourselves later on down the road. And to help us, Prabhupada is always speaking very strongly. In fact, the eighth offense to the holy name is to maintain material attachments even after hearing so much instruction on the matter. the subject matters we know with our intelligence, but to realize them takes a lifetime of service and blessings from Guru and Krishna. So here Śrīla Prabhupāda stresses the temporary nature of relationships in this world, particularly the most near and dear, and the family relationships. We're so caught up in these family affairs that in one sense we think that as if they're eternal and they'll never end. In fact, in some, believe it or not, they can put in Ripley's Believe It or Not, there are even some religious philosophies which advocate that when you die and you go to quote-unquote heaven, you still have the same mom, the same dad, the same brother, the same sister. Exactly what age they are, they don't necessarily, but there are philosophies, like the Mormon Church, for example. They believe in the eternality of the immediate family. Our very humble proposition is that this is just another extension of illusion. Because all these relationships that we have in this material world are temporary. We can't become overly attached. We have to be responsible in all the relationships in this world. And responsibility, our understanding of responsibility is to whomever we're relating to or associating with or serving with, we have to inspire them in Krishna consciousness. That is a real relationship. But a relationship based on sense gratification, which most relationships are in this world, it's illusory. We gave the analogy this morning of the river in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. It's described that by the force of the river's waves and the current, little pieces of sticks and leaves and grass and branches, they come together and form a clump for some time by the force of the river's waves, and then they exist like that for a short while, and by the force of that river's waves and the current, after some time they're again separated. So the verse in the Bhagavatam goes on to say that in the same way all of us come together as friends, as family members, as citizens of a particular country, according to the waves of time and our past desires and karma. And we exist as a family, we exist as friends, we exist as compatriots in a country. And by the force of time and our karma and our desires, we're again separated. As Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very aptly put it, eloquence is truth spoken concisely. He said, the whole show is only temporary. So we can't be overly attached. We can be attached as a sense of duty, a sense of responsibility to our loved ones, to inspire them to become Krishna conscious. But we have to understand that at some point there's going to be separation. The odds are that all of us will lose some loved ones, because we have a very extended family, before we die. We had to prepare ourselves. We've seen it on the TV, we've heard it on the news, we've seen different dramas and theatrical performances, and we see that it's a very difficult thing to deal with, separation from loved ones. But it doesn't have to be. If one has knowledge, one can remain equipoised in any situation in life. One can remain equipoised when there's an opportunity for great material opulence. One won't be tempted, and one won't be disturbed in the face of the greatest tragedy because he has spiritual knowledge. He can be equipoised in this temporary world of birth and death. He can be peaceful. And Krishna even states in Bhagavad Gita that without being peaceful, how can one be happy? How can one practice Krishna consciousness? We know the mentality of a saintly person who has realized knowledge in the face of the temporary nature of this world, the loss of loved ones. In the 11th verse of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, gatasum gatasumscha nana sochanti panditaha. Panditaha means a learned person. Those who are wise lament, neither for the living nor the dead. This is a lesson we should all learn so we can be equipoised, not unnecessarily disturbed in the face of so-called happiness and so-called distress in this world. Lord Buddha, incarnation of Lord Krishna, once guided one of his disciples towards this realization of the temporary nature of our relationships in this world. One time one of his disciples, a young woman, she gave birth to a young child, or a child, and within a matter of weeks the child became ill and passed away. She was so upset. How is it? My first child, and why me? Why is this happening to me, as if it's not happening to anyone else? Ahanyahani bhutani. Yudhishthira answers Yamaraja's question. What's the most amazing thing? The most amazing thing in this world is that everywhere hundreds of millions of living entities are going to the kingdom of death, but I'm thinking I'm going to stay here permanently. It's the most amazing thing. So she went to her guru, who happened to be God himself. There are some fortunate souls like Arjuna and others who may have the Supreme Lord as their spiritual master. One time a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, who's the guru of the Brajavasis? And Prabhupada laughed. He said, Krishna. So her spiritual master was Buddha, Gautama Buddha. So she went to said, Lord, why is this happening to me? Why me? Why I've lost a child in this? Why? So Buddha said, so you don't understand? Why me? What's happened to me? So Buddha said, so you go door to door in this village and you beg grains from any household and you bring me back a palm full of grains. She couldn't understand what he was talking about. Now go now. And you just beg a handful of grains from any household in this village. So she started to leave to serve the order of her guru. And he said, but you can only accept those grains from the home where no one has died. Okay, well, obviously, I'll come across some house in this village where, you know, the father has passed away or grandpa. So she went to the first house, and my spiritual master has asked me to please beg some grains for his pleasure. Please, oh, no problem. There's one condition, sir, that no relative has ever passed away. Oh, grandpa passed away last week. Sorry. She went to the next house. Bakshish, some grains. Oh, no problem. Oh, but there's one condition that no relative has passed away in his family. Oh, great-grandfather passed away last month. The next house, father has passed. Nephew, cousin, you know, in India the families are very extended families. There was no hope. Finally she realized her foolishness. She realized that the situation is there in every household. She came back sober. Realized by the mercy of her spiritual master. But actually it's a great challenge for all of us. Prabhupada is saying here, this illusory material life, family life, it's very temporary, don't be attached. Now he said, now I'm attached from it, detached from it, so I'm living a happy life, I'm laughing here in Vrindavan. Where are all those family members now? Prabhupada passed the test. But for us it's a great challenge actually, to be equipoised as we gradually, the little branches and the clumps of grass and the twigs, they become separated by the force of time and our past deeds and misdeeds. We have to discuss these subject matters. We don't want to be like the ostrich who, in the face of some reality of life, some danger, he digs a hole and puts his head in the ground and pretends the hunter's not there. To be prepared. That's the honorable motto of the American Boy Scouts. Be prepared. So how do you prepare yourself for these type of for this particular calamity in life with knowledge. Diras tat namuyanti, we quoted the other night. The changing of bodies is there, but diras tat namuyanti. The sober sage is not bewildered by such a change. What is the source of his sobriety? Why is he sober? Why is he equipoised in the face of temptation or tragedy? Is it some sentiment? Because he's tough? No, because he has knowledge. Chanaka Pandit glorifies this knowledge, this ability to see things as they are. This is the glory of the human race. Philosophy is what distinguishes us. The ability to understand or recite philosophy is what distinguishes man from all the other 8 million species of life. It's God's gift to us. We should all embrace it and take advantage. Nowadays, people are hardly philosophical about it. They're just guided by their mind and senses. No one stops to consider, to reflect, to try to understand. They don't use their brain. They don't use their buddhi, their intelligence, to analyze situations. But this is a wonderful thing. Philosophy is not just meant for philosophers. Everyone in his own right is meant to be, to a greater or lesser degree, a philosopher. To think, not like the animals, just on instinct, but to think. Therefore, Janaka Pandit, he says, Savari Bhushanam Chandro Narinam Bhushanam Pati Priti Vi Bhushanam Raja Vidya Sarvash Bhushanam. The ornament of night is the moon. The ornament of woman is a good husband. The ornament of the earth is the king. In Vidya Sarvash Bhushanam. And knowledge is the ornament of everything. We're so fortunate in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness to have philosophy. With that philosophy, we can figure out what is this material nature, we can figure out, or we can be guided how to get out of material nature, and we'd be guided into the spiritual world. It's all there on the shelves in our houses. Prabhupada did say, my only complaint is my disciples don't read my books. It's a great advantage, but Kalo Shuddha Shambhavan. The merciless nature of this age is everyone is born Sudra. Sudra means not so much intelligent. They like handicrafts. But we don't have to remain like that. By good association and by training, diction, mercy, we can rise beyond the modes of nature because Sudras are situated in the mode of ignorance. Beyond passion, we can come into goodness, and in goodness everything is illuminated. We can all become brahmanas, actually. Brahmana doesn't mean brahmana by birth. Brahmana is understood by qualification, and one gains qualification, again, by good association and training. So it's by knowledge, and it's there. It's we should be greedy, eager for it, to read. I just came to America last week and somehow had the impression that Americans had pretty much given up reading. They were just glued to the television, which does all the thinking for you. Or movie theaters are packed. They do the thinking for you in a very destructive way. But I went to buy a book by Deepak Chopra, which I saw somebody reading on the airplane. And I know that he made an extensive study of Srila Prabhupada's books. He admits it. A lot of his philosophy, which is a little bit kind of mixes it all, but he did read Prabhupada's books. So there was one book called The Third Jesus. I was interested what was his take or his angle on Jesus, because obviously he's grounded in Vedic philosophy. So I saw two people reading it, and I saw another person buying the book in the airport. I wanted to see. So I wasn't going to buy, I was going to walk in and look at it. So I went to Borders, I think it's called Borders. I think it's the only bookstore left in America. It's huge. It gobbled all the other ones up. And I was stunned when I walked in the store and saw how many people were reading. Young, old, and everything in between. I had this false impression that, of course, a lot of people do. I mean, I heard that the average American watches 4 hours of television a day. What they watch, I don't know. Because I also turned on the television to see what they're watching, and it was like, what? You know, you need the brain of a 10-year-old child to just, you know, that's all, to listen to this stuff, watch it. But I was impressed. And it was one of those big stores, and there were just tons of kids sitting down and reading, and the parents and the teenagers, and I thought, whoa. I thought that we should also be like that in our movement. We should be avid readers. Prabhupada said one time, we should know the books like a lawyer knows the law books. And that will protect us from the influence of the material energy and reveal to us the divine nature of the spiritual world. So here's one advantage. That by that knowledge, as Prabhupada, he makes the statement, the temporary nature of these relationships, and then he goes on to explain why they're illusory. He said, because, well, back to the ABCs, we're not this body. We're the soul within the body. He says it's the soul that gives life to the body. The body doesn't have life. The body was never alive. The body dies? No. The body was never alive. How can it die if it was never alive? Way to analyze it from all angles. The body is made of material energy, as we often say in our introductory lectures in public. And there's so many material nature doesn't have life, it doesn't have consciousness, it's dead. There's so many sophisticated material things in this room, the lights and the electrical system and the heating and the plumbing, and it's sophisticated to some degree. But it's not living, it's all dead material energy to be manipulated by a conscious person. So this body is made of the same elements that make anything else up in this room, which is all dead energy, not conscious, not living. The body, just arranged in a different way, the body's dead. Where's the life, Prabhupada says here in his stanza. You'll find the life in the skin and the bones and the blood. And now, where's the life? The life is there in the soul. And that soul is so powerful that it can, you could say, illuminate the entire body with consciousness. Consciousness is a symptom of the soul, as is heat and light a symptom of the sun. Compared to the gigantic universe, the sun's tiny. To us, it looks ginormous, as they say in Australia. It's a ginormous, the sun. But actually, it's a speck in the sky of this vast universe. But although it's very tiny, it's so powerful that the whole universe is heated up by the sun, and the whole universe is lit up by the sun, although it's a speck in a corner of the universe. In the same way, the soul is very tiny, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in dimension, and is seated in the region of the heart, but by the presence, there's life, the symptoms of life throughout the entire body. So that's really the object of affection. When you say to someone, I love you, you must be addressing the soul, otherwise your affection is misplaced. A boy in illusion says to a girl, I love you. I love everything about you. Yes? Everything about me? I just love everything about you. You love my stomach. You love my pancreas. You love my two kidneys. You love my brain matter. You love my skeletal system. You love my 2,280 miles of blood vessels, nerves. What do you love? I love you. I love your body. There was once a song I heard on Sankirtan parking lot. Let me hear your body talk. It was gross. But as soon as the soul, the person leaves the body, then he's no longer attracted. These are all analogies we've heard. But we have to hear again and again. So really, when this soul leaves the body, there's nothing to lament. This is the wise man laments neither for the living nor the dead, because he knows that the person is unaffected by death. Of course, you could say from another angle of vision, there's a lot to lament when a conditioned soul dies. Because, as Krishna says in Gita, for one who's taken his birth, death is certain. Whew, it's all over. No. Krishna says, and for one who has died, birth is certain. Back to prison. Just like sometimes people go to prison, they get out, they haven't had a change of heart, they commit some heinous crime, and they're right back in again. So life is like that. Brahmanda brahmati konya bhagyavan jeev guru krishna prasad pai bhakti lai. What has been our business in this world since time immemorial? Birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. Nothing wonderful about it. So it is lamentable that a person didn't take proper advantage of this life to realize he was a spiritual. His real interest was spiritual. His real interest was serving Krishna. And he died like a dog. A dog is born in ignorance. A dog lives in ignorance. And he dies in ignorance. So sometimes this strong language is used, like by Shukadeva Goswami. Those who are hogs, dogs, camels, and asses never take the opportunity to glorify the all-blissful personality. People don't like to be called like that. But if that is your mentality, we don't judge by the birth. Again, we judge by the mentality. If you maintain the same mentality, it's lamentable that you didn't take this golden opportunity. But when a devotee dies, are we to lament the death of a devotee? Yes, we have our human nature and we have our attachments as Vaishnavas. But the higher understanding is given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that when a Vaishnava passes this world, we find this shloka on the Samadhi Mandir of Srila Haridas Thakur in Jagannath Puri. I heard that it was put there by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. A Vaishnava dies to live in the spiritual world, and while living tries to spread the holy name around. So, in that sense, a conditioned soul's death is lamentable, the departure of a Vaishnava. With knowledge we understand that due to his transcendental activities, he's assured of a very auspicious destination. Even if he doesn't go back home, back to God. We often say, oh, they've gone back home. Well, I mean, this will be so easy. Even Krishna says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabaha. After many, many births, one who is in knowledge surrenders to me. Atmanivedanam, full surrender, and qualifies himself to go back to the spiritual world. In Gaudiya tradition, I haven't found the verse, but I've heard it stated by many illustrious speakers, that if one is strictly following Eke Kudunandana, one birth as a sadhaka, second birth, spontaneous devotional service, and third birth, prema bhakti. And even then, when you leave, then you go to that planet in the universe where Lord Krishna is performing his leelas, because at any given time, the Lord is kindly performing his leelas in this world. Some planet right now, it's Janmashtami, somewhere in the universe, Krishna's going with the Kura, in the chariot with Balaram to Mathura. Somewhere he's killing Vidvingara. So when you are perfected, then you go to that planet where those pastimes are taking place, and you take birth in the womb of a liberated soul, a Vaishnavi, and you're born into that family, and then according to your propensity, your siddha deha, your eternal relationship, you're trained. And when you're trained in your propensity, then you go back home, back to Godhead. So one can say, oh, and even Krishna says in Gita that the one who's not perfected in his practice of yoga, also indicating bhakti yogis, they'll take birth again in a family of transcendentalists. Verily, such a birth is rare, the Lord says. But even, whatever, whether we're born again, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if I have to take birth, Lord, let it be in the home of your devotee. I would rather be born in the home of your devotee as an insect than become a non-devotee Brahma. So our life is always auspicious. Auspiciousness, the definition of auspiciousness is that activity, meaning devotional service, which brings us closer to the Lord. And the definition of inauspiciousness is any activity, even it may be pious activity, in some sense, that takes us away from Krishna. But our lives are full of auspiciousness. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, shmaranam, padasevanam, archanam, bandham, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. As long as we're always engaged in one of the nine processes of devotional service, our next birth will be very auspicious. And if we're fortunate, we may not have to take birth again. That's up to Guru and Garanga. We can return to the spiritual sky. But really, when those in our beloved community pass away, it's bittersweet. It's bitter because we miss their association, but at the same time, it's sweet because we know there's no auspiciousness. They're going forward by the Lord's mercy. So let us always be engaged in Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes favorable and unfavorable times for leaving this world according to the strict practitioners of Ashtanga Yoga. Different, where the sun is in this course, or the sun is in that course, and this and that. And then he looks at Arjuna and says, don't be worried about this. Just always be engaged in devotional service. And your future shall always be very bright. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Śrīla Prabhupāda's poem Vrindavan Bhajan ki, Gaura Prema Nandi. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.